The trafficking of human beings in the sex trade is an ancient crime, of course. The trafficking of pornographic images online is, by comparison, a new phenomenon. And it's unclear what aspect of this vast sexual playground constitutes criminal activity. The clearest case for criminal prosecution of porn consumers comes in the category of child pornography. The actual use of children in porn is a serious crime, but the observing of child porn online constitutes more of a legal gray area. Politically, the momentum is to crack down hard on users of child porn, but many of the consequences for defendants and society are unanticipated, and this grave new world presents new challenges for lawyers, judges, and therapists. It's a story chronicled by journalist Rachel Aviv in this week's issue of The New Yorker. The Science of Sex Abuse follows the story of John, not his real name, who has been in prison for nearly 12 years, although there is no evidence that he has ever committed any physical act with a minor.
John was a soldier in Kentucky, and he discovered child pornography online in the late 90s, right when it was becoming sort of exploding on the internet. In a few months, he downloaded more than 2,000 images of child pornography and eventually struck up a correspondence with an undercover cop who called himself Indie Girl. And he and Indie Girl planned to meet at a park with Indie Girl's little sister, who was 14, supposedly. And from there, John was promptly arrested, and he's been involved in the criminal justice system ever since. That was 15 years ago.
And he was lured to an actual place where two agents posing as underage girls were ready for something that had been arranged online, and then agents saw him, arrested him, and hence he's been in the criminal justice system ever since. Is that
fair? Exactly.
Yeah. What do you make of how society is coming to view what John did? Is it a crime? Is it rape? Is it fantasy? Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like lawyers, prosecutors, and therapists mm-hmm. are grappling with all of this simultaneously.
Right. There's been a flurry of legislative activity surrounding child pornography, in part because it's such a new crime. One congressman called it the fastest growing crime in America. And in the past 15 years, sentences have increased by nearly 500%.
And what capacity are you talking about? The sentences for abusing a child in a physical location mm-hmm. or sentences for looking at pictures?
For downloading child pornography, those sentences have increased by nearly 500%. And the average sentence right now is 119 months, which is actually about the same as the average sentence for a physical sex crime.
And part of this increase in sentencing comes from the obvious repugnance mm-hmm. over this behavior. But it also comes from a set of assumptions about people who do this are more likely to blank.
Right.
And you examine that in this story.
I think one of the issues is that sex abuse is very hard to detect and to prosecute, whereas child pornography use is much easier. You can trace an IP address. And there is this assumption that if you have these fantasies which you're expressing online, then you have also acted out on these fantasies, or maybe you will. So there is a way in which the sexual behavior online is conflated with the actual physical sex abuse that may or may not have occurred.
Is there medical scientific evidence, and this is not to justify child pornography viewing in any sense, but is there evidence that repeated downloading of images does increase the likelihood to commit some other forms of crimes or recommit some other forms of sexual abuse?
I think the evidence is very mixed on this. From John's perspective, he described child pornography chat rooms as a kind of subculture. And he said that desires that would otherwise seem too abhorrent and too abnormal to express, he suddenly felt like in that context, there was a normalizing effect. So in that way, I think it did maybe ennoble him to express these desires in ways that I think maybe the internet facilitated that. John, the way that he describes it is that he almost fed off other people's fantasies in these online subcultures. He described it as a, quote, self-reinforcing community.
Did you find yourself sympathetic in any way? I don't know, feeling for the predicament of John, who, as I read the article, whatever happens to him, I mean, his life is defined mm-hmm. by being a guy who looks at naked kid pictures. That's it. And whether society has helped to do that or his computer has helped to do that or he was that when he was born, I kind of don't know the answer to that.
I mean, I couldn't help being haunted by the fact that he had spent the past 12 years in this kind of Kafkaesque journey through the criminal justice system. And one thing he said that really resonated with me, when he was detained right before he was civilly committed, he shouted to his psychologist, "And all for a crime I have not yet committed."
What do psychiatrists and psychologists and therapists make of this notion of ascribing to behavior that's really all about intent, the idea that you're going to act?
Well, psychiatrists have been more concerned with the issue of civil commitment of sex offenders, which the article talks about in the second half, because John, right before he was reaching the end of his criminal sentence, was told that he would be indefinitely detained because he'd been classified as a sexually dangerous person. And that is defined at the federal level as a person who will have serious difficulty in refraining from sexually violent conduct. So I think psychiatrists have questioned whether we can really distinguish inability to control one's impulses from a failure to control one's impulses. The editor of the DSM basically said that psychiatry was being co-opted by the criminal justice system to solve a problem that is moral rather than medical.
And the DSM is the ultimate sort of medical authority of what constitutes mental illness. What do you think is driving this? Is the law driving this? Are prosecutors driving this? Are politicians driving this? Or are digital devices driving this?
What I found after researching this is that people commit sex crimes for the same reasons that they commit all sorts of crimes. It's because they're indifferent to other people's feelings and rights, and they're impulsive and they're selfish. And I wondered the degree to which there's a categorical difference between these sex crimes and all other kinds of crimes.
Do you think computers on some level and the ability to download images anonymously and to not know who it is you're downloading just to see their image, that increases this sense of detachment and not caring about individuals?
Well, actually, there was a forensic psychologist who studied child pornography consumers, and he looked at what percentage of them had also committed physical sex crimes. And he found that about half of them had, but there was a marked difference between the two groups. The people whose deviant activity only occurred online, he called them fantasy offenders, and he said that the internet is this strange in-between space where people may do and say things that they would never dare in real life.
Is that the creation of crime or the imagining of crimes that one would never commit?
I think it can be either.
Yeah. Well, Rachel Aviv, thanks so much. New Yorker writer whose most recent story, The Science of Sex Abuse, appears in this week's New Yorker.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.